for the upcoming U.S. Black Engineer Information Technology Spring Dean's issue, Lango Dean and Rayondin Kennedy sat down with the subject of our cover story, Dr. Robin Coger, Dean of the College of Engineering at North Carolina A&T State University, for an in-depth conversation ranging from the number of degrees awarded to African-American students to the importance of government and corporate sponsors and the ever-important issue of the cost of higher education. Please enjoy our conversation with Dr. Robin Coger, Dean of the College of Engineering at North Carolina A&T State University, brought to you by U.S. Black Engineer Information Technology.
Thank you for that introduction, Ray. Dr. Coger, I was looking at engineering by the numbers with the American Society of Engineering Education, and I looked at your numbers over the past 5 years. That is all the bachelor's degrees awarded to African Americans at your school. Of course, as you know, you're in the top three. You've been in the top three for many years. Over the past 5 years, your numbers have kind of fluctuated between 163 degrees awarded to 113 in 2017. So I'd like you to sort of like just give us an idea of what's going on. We know you're doing good work, but we kind of want to understand what's happening with those numbers.
So specifically, you're looking at African-American graduates with bachelor degrees in engineering. That's what you're talking about, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So I'm not worried. And so I hear what you just say, where the numbers may change. But what you have to also realize is that as students travel abroad, as students do co-ops, it changes the flow through of when they graduate. And so you normally should look over the course of an average number of years so that you give the students who decided to get real world experience or build a global perspective while they're away time to come back and finish their degrees. So if you're accounting from when they come in and then they graduate and it's a regular flow through, but there can always be those kind of adjustments. So we tend to look at more of a wider average range to see what you're seeing and see if you see any differences there. I don't think you should worry about that as it pertains to North Carolina A&T, because what we find is that our enrollments at this university have continued to increase. And so the population of students at North Carolina A&T this year is over 12,000 enrolled students. In the College of Engineering, it's almost 2,000 students. And so what we're always trying to do is focus on competitiveness for our students. And so when it's competitive, then you have to make sure the fulfillment of what kind of experiences the students have while they're in school with you makes the difference. Between what kinds of professionals they're going to be post-graduation. And that's really what we look at North Carolina A&T.
Thank you for that. That gives us a lot of insight because, of course, we don't have that kind of information. So we look at the numbers and think, oh, what's going on? But that what you just said gives us a lot of insight and gives us new information that we didn't have and that we can share with our readers. Perhaps you'd like to tell us about what's important about A&T, NCA&T, what you will continue to be, and why the public should keep on watching you.
All right. So when we think about who we are as a college at North Carolina A&T's College of Engineering, we are focused on cultivating leaders who excel in academics and innovation and in research. And as we do that, the way that you build leaders is that you make sure that they have a richness of experiences while they're here as students with us. And so our team has therefore really embraced challenges. When I say our team, by the way, that means our faculty, our staff, our students together have embraced just a number of different things. For instance, we have built two makerspaces here in the College of Engineering. And so you say, well, makerspaces, you hear that all the time. Why is that important? The reason why it's important that a makerspace is going to be designed depending on what it's seeking to encourage in the students that use it. And in our makerspace, the reason why we designed it was necessary for this generation to, one, when they wake up with a new idea, a new innovation. We wanted to make sure they had a space that they could go and execute and get that idea from thought to execution, and that we were encouraging that in our students. And so that's why we built these two makerspaces. They are student run, they are student designed. And so is it a form of project management? Absolutely, but it's even more a space that encourages that muscle of innovation. And that's necessary today because our students are graduating into a work world where the pace of change is so quick that they have to already leave us already understanding that it's their responsibility to not only be agile enough to anticipate and think of new ideas for existing corporations, but we also have students that are interested in considering in their future entrepreneurship. And so it's important our environment continues to meet them where they are. We also are a National Academy of Engineers Grand Challenge Scholars Program University. And what that means is that the National Academy of Engineers has a particular program that's designed to encourage certain competencies in the students that are ultimately end up being honored as Grand Challenge Scholars. And those include that they've been engaging in the depth of research and creative activities, that they are thinking about business and entrepreneurship, and most importantly to us, having an entrepreneurial mindset, that they're engaged in multidisciplinary activities. Because when we think about what we do as engineers and computer scientists, and by the way, computer science is also part of our College of Engineering, what we deliver from a product and from an innovation standpoint also has relevance to business and disrupting businesses. And so it's important that they're able to think across majors, not only in the college, but certainly beyond the college. It also has multiculturalism as one of the competencies of the Grand Challenge Scholars Program. Multiculturalism certainly can be thought of as one culture or one race from another, but it also is exactly the fact that our businesses are global businesses. And so you, as someone who's gotten your degree here in the United States, it is very common and very probable that you're going to work in a international company where some of your team members may be across the sea, or you may be on a team meeting with China. You know, choose a time when you both can meet. And so it's very important that our students understand that our professions are therefore global. And being able to understand that the bottom line when you work in a team is that you're working with people. And so multiculturalism, in the essence, is understanding that you're people first, and then have a openness to the fact that there may be other things about any of us that may differ. And then, of course, there's a social consciousness. And we, of course, you know why that's important. As engineers in computer science, so many of the solutions, when you remember that they could have negative or positive consequences for whether it's the environment or for the ripple effects that they might have on others, it's important that you're thinking about that as you're designing solutions. So our National Academy of Engineering Grand Challenge Scholars Program has those five competencies, and we're excited that our students are really embracing the value of all of those. We also have a Global Engineering Leadership Program. Our Global Engineering Leadership Program is something we've actually run through the college, various travel abroad programs for many years now. Our Global Engineering Leadership Program was something that was created by my advisory board for the college. And our students travel, whether they're traveling to Switzerland or to Italy or to Scotland or England, they're traveling abroad to visit with various engineering companies, again, to reinforce the fact that our professions are global. And so by being immersed, and they're immersed in the culture, but they're also interacting with the engineers and computer scientists that are at that company, and therefore helping them to make sure they're not putting on unnecessary blinders as they think about charting their own professional careers. Again, They may work in this state, in this country. They may work abroad. And that's what the Global Engineering Leadership Program, which we call GELP, G-E-L-P for short, of North Carolina A&T's College of Engineering helps reinforce. But that's some of it. And, you know, even when I was talking about the Grand Challenge Scholars Program, and I mentioned to you that there was a part of that that ended up having students involved with research or creative projects, you know, it's always has been relevant to our environment for our undergraduates as well as our grad students to engage in research. The reason why that's important is because research is one of those frontiers where it's never where you're creating things that haven't been done before. And that's very important as an engineer when you're seeking to take what you're learning in the classroom and apply it to creating new results. And so our grad students, our undergraduates, our professors working together and in engaging in research really makes a difference for our students understanding the possibilities of their fields. So whether you're talking about the makerspace or whether you're talking about the research engagement or any of the things that I may have talked about or not even mentioned, hands-on application of our field make a difference in what we do and our students' understanding of what their careers will become. When we think of who our students are, we expect their limitations to, for them not to have any limitations. We expect them to continue to advance forward in their fields. And so when you think about the hands-on, internships and co-ops are examples of hands-on experiences. The makerspace is examples of hands-on experiences. Our students involved in a makerspace or our students involved in competitions are all examples of hands-on application of the fundamentals that they learn in the classroom and then apply in ways that have never been applied before to create new innovations. One of the things that I may not have mentioned when we were talking about some of the things that I'm excited that our team has continued to embrace and build and expand is our students involved in key competitions. You may or may not know that North Carolina's A&T's College of Engineering is one of 8 universities involved in a 3-year auto drive competition that has been sponsored by the Society of Automotive Engineering as well as General Motors, in which the General Motors dropped off at 8 of these North American universities, including us, electric vehicle. And this the task is for each of these universities' teams to equip that electrical vehicle into an autonomous vehicle able to navigate urban terrain. And so each year of that competition, there are tasks that the team is focused on achieving. And because they're tasked on achieving that, it's incredibly important that the team continues to evolve as the complexities of the tasks happen. Now, that's not any different than real life, and it's certainly not different than what happens in the professional careers. And so that means that the undergraduate and graduate students that are engaged on that competition and actually all of our competitions have this edge of realizing that the theory doesn't always work. And when you start with the theory, which is a good way to plan, and then you apply it, there are certain things that you learn in terms of how do you get things done. And so so that's one competition that we're excited about. You may or may not know that our SAE Aero team won first in the nation, second in the world last spring in the Design Series West competition. And so for our students to, from scratch, build an airplane, and then fly it, and then compete, and then come in first in the nation is so wonderful. But the excitement that they had for having designed it first on a computational simulation, and then to actually then build it, is amazing. And so all of these are what I was saying before as hands-on experience. This is hands-on application of the fundamentals of what you learn in the classroom, so that you, as an engineer or computer scientist, is able to be effective at moving your fields forward. Our computer science teams consistently win competitions around the nation. And so by building, by whether it's a hackathon in Charlotte or a hackathon at Georgia Tech, when they take first place, not only do they make me proud, but they understand and enjoy what their fields are about and the ways that you can apply it in order to move things forward.
I know you touched on social consciousness and multiculturalism, but I wanted to sort of press you a little bit more on how you bring everyone together, because all of your students get different kinds of micro opportunities along the way. They come from different cultures. They've been treated differently. They have different perspectives and different attributes. So how do you ensure that A&T, the College of Engineering at A&T, is a level playing field for everyone?
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate the question. I think that's a tough question for anyone, because I think any organization can continue to improve in that area. But one thing that I will guarantee, whether you're talking about my college here at A&T, or if you're talking about any of the colleges of the deans of the HBCU Engineering Deans Council, which I happen to chair, what we understand is that quality, intelligence, and potential is not limited based on where you came from, the color of your skin. And we understand that the nation's competitiveness requires us to make sure that we're exciting so many, just talent in general, about the possibilities of our fields of engineering and computer science. And so what we try to do here in the College of Engineering at A&T is almost imagine that you excite students about the possibilities of our fields in a multi-pronged approach. And that way, what you're trying to do always is helping students want to be a part of the community as opposed to opting out because they assume that that part of the those fields are not for them. And I think that's the main thing to mention, because you and I will, I'm sure, agree that talent, because it comes in so many different forms and packages, it's what I know for sure happens when you are underrepresented in your professional field, is that you are not deciding only if I can do it, because there's so many more people that have the potential to be engineers and computer scientists than opt to do so. You're also deciding if I want to be part of that community, if I see that community as one that I want to spend more of my my career, my life with. And so that's why I think the onus is on all of us, regardless of our color, for helping people feel as though they are valued and being more inclusive in recognizing the fact that ideas come from diverse packages. And so that diversity of thought and the necessity of that diversity thought in our technical fields is even more incredibly important now to the competitiveness of the nation. Well, actually, it's always been important, but the back to the speed in which business is moving today, it's even more important because you don't have a long runway in order to wait for people to come up with the ideas that will keep a company competitive. And so the only way that you can get there faster is if you have a diversity of thought around the table and that you're listening to those diversity of ideas as you're creating the solutions and the directions that your company has in mind or that the government has in mind. And so the only way you can do that in a fast-changing time is if you actually include the diverse minds. And if you're going to include the diverse minds, then that means that our educational institutions, like North Carolina A&T or any university across the country, has to make sure that it is that they are recognizing that they need to have a wide variety of students choosing our majors.
You mentioned the NAE. You also mentioned the SAE. Were there any corporate partners that you would like to give a shout out to? And what sort of research engagements do you have with private industry?
Yes. So your point about what kind of research engagements do we have with private industries? By the way, you get into trouble when you start naming names and then you don't name them all. So you can get into real trouble there. But here's what I will say. I think that one of the challenges we find is that investment by the corporate arm tends to take quite a few visits in order for us to begin those kind of collaborations, even though we are ready and have been ready in order to really enhance what the company is interested in. And so I think that when you think about the box, that sometimes the public or a corporation may want to fit an HBCU in, I would encourage all corporations to open up their own lenses so that they understand that North Carolina A&T, and I would say even HBCUs, they're not a monolithic entity. Each university, just like any university in the nation, is distinct and unique. So you can't fit all universities that are in this category of HBCU into a small box. It's very important that you look at the value of each of the institutions that you already have interactions with in order to see ways that are really mission specific, which are certainly workforce, but also very much relevant to the engineering and computer science needs of the company. And so I do wish that there was a more readiness to acknowledge who our universities are today, because who North Carolina A&T is today and who North Carolina A&T's College of Engineering is today is so rich in quality research and quality publications and quality output, scholarly output as well as student output, that it is almost a harm to the nation when the proportional investment from a collaboration, research collaboration now, standpoint isn't made in our institutions. Because when that's not done, then you can imagine that the rate of increase of impact that we all could be having would be highly accelerated if a proportional investment or partnership were being made with our institutions.
Absolutely. I have read some articles that say smaller schools, minority schools, I guess it's like when people say, oh, I can't find the talent, and not pursuing the contracts that are out there. They're not chasing them hard enough. They're not collaborating together enough so that there are not enough partnerships, say, between HBCU engineering schools. So right now, you're wearing many hats as the engineering dean of a leading HBCU engineering school, as chair of the Council of Engineering Deans, for HBCUs. How would you respond to people who come back, push back at the point that you made earlier, that the investment is not really commensurate with what HBCUs are doing and have been doing for a long period of time?
Okay, so I have almost two responses because there's two different dimensions to what you just asked.
Okay.
Proportionately significant investment is back to the goal. So let's say, a university that is over 12,000 students is not a small institution. It is a significantly sized institution, but certainly it is not a $50,000 student university, but it's not a small, we're not a small university. And so when you mentioned, HBCUs aren't applying for the contracts, et cetera, you know that depending on which university depends on, again, it's back to that categorizing of HBCUs in general are not applying. And also reminding anyone who says that, please look back at how you invested and partnered with, just name the university that does quite a bit of contracts in their beginning of entering the contract world. And in the beginning, there was quite a bit of partnering in order to help them learn how it's done. And depending on which university you're talking about, depends on if that is part of what's needed there. So we wouldn't expect a university that has a contract scale of, let's say $12 million to be at the same kind of infrastructure from a contract side as one that is working 1 billion of contracts. But you would expect there to be an opportunity, particularly if they're willing to, and I would say North Carolina A&T is continuing to advance what we do in the contract world. So we do contracts now, but it's such an area of opportunity and possibility for us that it's only going to continue to increase in time. And so I think that sometimes be part of the solution is what I would focus on, and just choose that university. And if you're interested in having that university work more and more contracts in a particular space because of that university strength, then I would encourage those who say that to just be part of the solution, because the likelihood is that that university is very much interested. At North Carolina A&T's College of Engineering, for instance, we have five cross-departmental research strengths. They are multi-scale materials development and analysis, cybersecurity and networks operations, energy and sustainability, healthcare applications, and aerospace and transportation systems. And I mentioned those five because even though we have those five areas, the area where we have the most contracts has actually been in the cybersecurity and network operations space. And so, and while the others have tended to rely more on grants, traditional, you know, federal grants. So does that mean that because the team of researchers in one of those areas has been a little bit more responsive to applying to contracts, does it mean that the others aren't interested? It doesn't mean that at all. It just means that those are opportunities. And so I think that there is, quite honestly, quite a bit of value to continuing to expand in that area. But when you think about what we do, the ratio of faculty, how should I put this? The load of the workload of a single faculty and the proportion of what we do in the research realm ends up sometimes, as you said, I'm spread thin. Well, the truth is that all throughout my college, my faculty, staff, and we're also spread thin. But we think it's that important in order to invest that time, which is why we do. And so when you are engaging undergrads and graduates in your research, and we have 5 doctoral programs, 8 master's programs, and 10 undergraduate programs, and all of our undergraduate programs are ABET accredited here in the College of Engineering at North Carolina A&T. But when you are involved in this whole, all of these different parts of what we do as an academic institution and an academic college, it does mean that there aren't a lot of staff, for instance, that have extra time left in order to assist, you know, in some of the things that are necessary in order to manage the demands of the short time frames that often happen with contracts. So we will find that some faculty will opt out of choosing that path until you put certain infrastructure in place to make it easier for them to manage through those short timelines. And so I think it's just thinking through that and making sure that the opportunities for expanding that are well known enough so that more and more of our research decide to jump into that space.
You didn't comment, though, on your role as chair of the Council of HBCU Engineering Deans.
It is actually my honor to serve as the chair of the HBCU Engineering Deans Council, and that consists of deans at HBCUs that also have ABET-accredited engineering programs. And so together, we meet monthly and we see each other multiple times a year in order to not only discuss those things that we have in common, but also to collaborate on opportunities that are before us to work well together. And so we do that because there are times that things make sense for my university that don't make sense for another university, but there are other times when us working together actually allows us to achieve more as a team. And so I am so honored again to meet with my fellow deans in that way. We've been doing this now for a while together in a way to continue to, leverage each other's strengths. But mostly, you'll find that for what we do by us leading our colleges and schools, you find that it always is helpful to have a community that is able to work effectively together. And that's really what this council is about.
That's wonderful. Well, Dean Koger, is there anything that I haven't asked you about that you would like to comment on? And I don't know if Ray has any questions that he would like to ask.
I mentioned that I'm pretty excited, as you can tell, by a lot of what's going on in our College of Engineering. And I also mentioned that we have 5 cross-departmental research strengths in our college. But I wondered if it would be helpful to just highlight in a sentence or so a subset of them, just like 3, so that you know a little bit about what we're doing on the research side.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So, for instance, I'll mention that one of our teams of researchers is working on swarming of autonomous vehicles. And when you think about swarming, what you're thinking about is if you have a fleet of autonomous vehicles that have a task to achieve and one goes down for whatever reason, how do you manage the network of communication so that the task that the one that went down was supposed to execute is now understood by the fleet, the swarm, so that now it is still executed, but now by one of the autonomous vehicles that was already there. And so you can imagine there's a wealth of opportunities for why that would might matter. But we have a wonderful team that is funded by the Department of Defense for some of their work. Another example would be in the space that I would guess I would call the space in which, let's say you're concerned about things like how do you do innovations where supply chain and logistics meet humanitarian efforts? And what I mean by that is one of our researchers is funded by the federal government, funded by NSF, in which she and her team are leveraging computational data analytics to improve strategies for hunger relief and food security. Mm. And so, yeah, and then they're making sure that students are strongly engaged in that project. So they're coming up with the solutions and thinking about it carefully. And so that's pushing the envelopes of innovation. And yet it's also leveraging, there's so much in data analytics, and particularly when you're talking about computational, so they have how you view it and how you understand it. And so it's just another place where our researchers are doing great work. Or I guess I can always continue to go on and on, and I know I can. So let's think about Google Car, autonomous vehicles on the road. And when you're trying, or even an autonomous vehicle that you're flying, and you're remotely, you know, you've got some kind of controller of how you're communicating with it. Or if you think about manufacturing equipment or robots, and again, you have some way that you're controlling it. Or if you have smartphone sensors or smart home or smart city technologies, there's something that they all have in common. And what those all have in common are just examples where they exchange information over a diverse part of platform. You may be using your cell phone in one case and a remote controller in another case. But what happens when you've got to concern yourself over protecting them from an attack? And so if you're trying to protect them from attack, you've got to know the kind of information that's passing over the highways of where the data traffic is happening, and you've got to be able to detect if someone is giving signaling to these kind of applications that are not what they should be. And so we have researchers that are working in those kind of areas. And it is a cybersecurity area, absolutely, but it's even more than that, because it's making sure that you are securing those kind of data traffic areas in ways that keep it from the evolving world of where someone may have negative goals that are different than these wonderful applications that are designed in order to make life easier in some ways, but you also have to make sure others are looking at how do you keep them safe.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. Thank you, Dr. Koger.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Go ahead, Ray. I know you have something you're waiting on me for.
Yes, ma'am. Dr. Koger, first off, I want to thank you again, and I kind of want to circle back and ask you the question of why is it important for organizations to support HBCU engineering programs?
Oh, no, that's great. Thank you. I can't even believe I didn't get to that topic because, you know, it's near and dear to me. When anyone looks at how much, particularly if I just focus on the HBCUs of our HBCU Engineering Dean's Council, I know for sure that we all are leveraging any investment in us in ways that get directly to the benefit of our students. And so there's not a lot of fluff. We really end up producing high with any investment that's made out of us. And I know that the quality of what we're graduating from North Carolina A&T's College of Engineering is very strong. And so when a company decides to invest, it means that they're thinking carefully about realizing and looking at, we have a proven record of producing strong graduates. So it's not as though it's a guess, it's a maybe. It's a proven record of doing that for a long time. And so if that is the case, then you would think that the benefit or the thought process from a corporate side would be, well, let's make sure that we're investing at least proportionately in a way that will produce even more of what we need for our corporations. And so now if we loop it around back to the corporate imperative to make sure that they are bringing diverse thought to the technical innovations, their engineering and computer science innovations that their company needs in order to be competitive in their own spaces, not investing would seem to be illogical, right? Because ultimately, if you look at our universities and how effective we are in producing great output, you would seem that it would seem to be an aligned goal to make sure that we're able to continue to do that and do that to and even increase our capacity to do that because of the partnerships with those corporations. And so it would seem to be an imperative. And so if a corporation would set numbers in order to have a diverse workforce, it would also seem that they would also have to invest in order to make sure that they are helping to produce that diverse workforce.
Absolutely. My follow-up to that will be, so how do we stress the competitive advantage of the diversity message to people who haven't quite got it yet?
I think we have to use, as always, a multi-pronged approach because I think it would help us all to understand, in some ways, back to the logic, if you know that you are benefiting greatly from the output of our university, then it would seem that you would definitely want us to produce even more so that your company would benefit even more, right? And so perhaps for those who are still in doubt on whether or not investment is necessary, that's where the question is. Because if we're still producing, and we are, and if it's a need for the workforce to have even more engineers and computer scientists, which is also a fact, then where are those increased number of engineers and computer science going to come from when some of the companies actually also need those to be domestic? Some it can be from anywhere in the world, and some need them to be domestic graduates. And if that's the case, I think it's time for perhaps it would be, I think I would welcome the CEOs of those companies also joining us as deans in sharing why it's so important that the partnerships with our HBCUs are in place in order to help them with their research competitiveness, as well as their workforce competitiveness. And in that way, it won't only be the HBCU academic environments talking about why the need is there, but maybe it will be heard more when it's some of the corporate partners also speaking that very loudly for others to hear. I think it's part of it. I think sometimes people stop listening when you hear it only from the HBCU community. It's going to need to be heard from multiple parts so that it actually is heard and acted on.
I completely agree. It's like it's almost like when I was growing up, my father, you know, they always give you lessons, and you hear it from them, you hear it from them all the time, and you don't quite get it. But as soon as you hear it from somebody else, it kind of sinks in, and then he used to always get on me. He's like, I've been telling you that for years, and now you heard it from somebody else, but now it finally sinks in. So sometimes the deliverer of the message does need to change in order for it to, the message to sink in.
Absolutely. And it's almost as though we're circling around it. We understand the importance of the diversity of thought, the inclusiveness of these different ideas so that you come up with different competitive solutions from a corporate standpoint. But that doesn't happen because you're still going back to hiring this. You have to have those people around the table and value what they have to contribute. And so it is an interesting time, but I do think it's a necessary time for the competitiveness of the nation.
Absolutely. Allies are very important everywhere. And so I have one last question. You gave us a great interview. You talked about a lot of the programs and research projects that you're doing. What is your vision for North Carolina A&T College of Engineering for the next 5, maybe 10 years? What's your vision for the school and the program?
So I mentioned to you before that here in the College of Engineering, we're focused on cultivating leaders who excel in academics, innovation, and research. And so when you think about what that means in a time in which the landscape of really what's changing so quickly in corporate America. And when you think about, for some businesses, when you say this business has been disrupted by this idea, and you can think of a category, and I'm sure you can think of a certain company where you think of as those are disruptors. Well, the point of disruptive is not just to disrupt. The point of those new ideas entering the workforce is that we're at a time in which there's so much possibility and capability where our computers are faster than they've ever been before. The more you understand what's business important to your company, the more you can start now thinking about how this technology from this side now can help a part of the business that you haven't thought about it before. And so for North Carolina A&T's College of Engineering, our goal is to continue to make sure that our students continue to be agile and ready to be impactful wherever they are, whether they decide to go to corporate America, to government, or to on to grad school and become professors. We want to make sure that wherever our graduates are, that they're first and foremost always proud of who we're producing inside of their alma mater, inside of North Carolina A&T and graduating from us. But we also want to make sure that they are consistently ready to accept and face whatever new challenges are before us and ready to solve it. And in order to do that, it requires them to certainly make sure that they're still being enriched by what we expose them to in the ecosystem of the college, but it's also important that they continue to build on their own readiness to learn as they continue in their fields. Because again, what our fields were 10 years ago and what our fields will be in 10 years are so different that their continued evolution is really what their leadership will be based on. And so when you think about who this college is, not only now, but certainly who we want to make sure we still are in the future, cultivating leaders means that the graduates from this university and the graduates from this college, we want to make sure that they are indeed pushing the envelope of what could be and thinking of new possibilities that are beyond what anyone would have ever thought. And that's really where the innovation part comes in, because the new ideas, the new connections, the new opportunities that we expect our graduates to come up with is really what makes my job as the Dean of the College of Engineering at North Carolina A&T so fulfilling. Because I am counting on the people that I work with and the people that we are helping to educate as the ones who are shaping shaping the nation. And because of that, I love my job.
That's so wonderful. That is great. You know, we've talked about everything, but we haven't talked about student debt and how you're helping students with that.
This is a challenge because, and this is when we were talking about the investment of corporations in a proportional way. That's mm-hmm. the reason why I was mentioning that. Because for students, there are so many students that would love to get engineering education here and at other institutions. But if they don't have the funding in order mm-hmm. to support that, their dreams end up being deferred. And as a matter of fact, unfortunately, you can have a student, and you can't give a scholarship to everyone. And our scholarship dollars at my institution aren't even close to what we need them to be. And so for me to see, not this past weekend, but the weekend before, we had a weekend in which I met so many talented students who were eager to join our student body in the fall. And it so much of it depended on whether or not they had the scholarships that they needed. And so when I talk about the investment, it is multiple ways that that investment needs to manifest. But I will tell you that investing it in terms of scholarships for talented students is extremely important to me as the Dean of the College of Engineering at North Carolina A&T, and I would also say also critically important to my other 14 fellow deans of our council, because debt is a barrier. See, if you have to define who's going to be a future leader in engineering and computer science based on if you are economically advantaged enough in order to afford it at this juncture, then that means that as a nation, we have to figure out how to widen that pool. And the solution is not as simple as saying, let's just lower the tuition, because you still have to make sure that you have educators that are able to be employed. I mean, you can see with our school systems, our public school systems, it's not just lower the tuition at every university, because every university doesn't have a sky-high tuition. I think our university is a state university. And so our tuition is relatively low, but it doesn't mean that there aren't so many talented minds that would love to pursue higher education, but it does have to be figured out. And so this is why we go back to why it's universities, governments, and corporations consistently working together, because the solution is never in one sphere versus another. It's in the conversations that happen, so that understanding, honestly understanding, and not in the political way, but understanding what's the problem and possible solutions requires those conversations to happen in a more quality way than they have happened thus far.
Thank you, Dr. Koger. Thank you so much.
Thank you both for taking the time to interview me. I've enjoyed the conversation, so thank you both.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this conversation with Dr. Robin Koger, Dean of the College of Engineering at North Carolina A&T State University. Be on the lookout for the upcoming U.S. Black Engineer Information Technology Spring Dean's issue, which also features this in-depth conversation.